Next case is 96-1788, 1790-1791, Kenneth R. Ruckman versus Cubby Drillers. That Mr. Becker, I believe, is going to argue first. Is that correct? Well, the appellant, whoever is going to argue first, argue. Okay. Excuse me. Mr. Hickey, I got you on the wrong side, didn't I? Sorry.
I'm Michael Hickey, I'm representing.
Yes. Okay.
All right. Please, of course, I'm just going to touch on the facts for a moment because you're reading the summary we picked up on the way in. I'm not sure. Clear on the facts, and there may be a few facts we disagree with, but I think the basic ones we agree with. The Applebee's, Mr. Ruckman, Mr. Riggs, and Mr. Brocious were all employees of Cubby Drilling. Cubby Drilling is a business that's drilling oil and gas wells. They will take a rig to a site, drill a well, an hour long it takes to drill, and then they'll move on to another site. On average, well, it'll take from a few days to a few months to complete the project. Was injured on January 20th, 1993, while he was commuting to a drill site, and he was carpooling, participating in a voluntary ride-sharing arrangement with two other employees. They had met up in Cadiz, Ohio, traveling to a drill site near Mercer, Pennsylvania. Mr. Riggs and Mr. Brocious were in the same car, and they were injured in a motor vehicle accident on December 17th, 1991. They had met up with two other employees, so there were four of them in the car. They had met up in camp and were traveling to a drill site near Champion, Ohio. At the time, all three were traveling on a public highway in a private vehicle. The vehicle was not supplied for, not a company car. They were not transporting any tools or equipment on the Lake Cubby.
They're being paid to drive, though, right?
Pardon?
They were being paid per diem to drive. Is that correct or not?
Well, that might be one of the disputed facts. I would say they were not. These accidents occurred approximately a half hour before their shift started, several miles away from the job site. They were not paid an hourly rate to travel to work. Their time began when they arrived for their shift.
Well, the issue is, what we have here, is the going and coming rule apply.
Absolutely.
In the going and coming rule cases, doesn't each of those cases apply to a fixed site place where an employee comes from his home, her home, goes to her job site, goes back home, as opposed to going from home to Chillicothe today, to Zanesville next week, and to Marietta the week after that?
I agree, Your Honor, that the going and coming rule applies to a fixed site employee. It's our position that in these cases, these Applebee's were fixed situs employees. Their sites were fixed, although temporary. All right? Now, they were fixed for several days, several months, however long it took to drill the oil well. There's a high-rise office building going up on the other side of the State House lawn. There are all kinds of employees, all kinds of building trades that will come and go on that project. Some will be there from beginning to end, probably. Right now, there are steel workers and concrete workers, and they'll be there for a great deal of time. Their job may last for many, many months, maybe a year. There are others who will come and go more rapidly, electricians, drywallers, foam insulation people. They may be there for a few days or a few weeks.
The carpooling arrangement, was that something the employer participated in, or was that strictly something the employees got together?
Strictly voluntary. The employer had no participation in organizing it, encouraging it, whatever. private car, they took turns sharing expenses, furnishing the car, buying the gas to...
Were they reimbursed for any of those items?
They received a per diem based upon, he took and drew concentric circles around Covey's location in Midvale, Ohio. There's testimony in the record by way of deposition from Mr. Lonzer that if they were from 60 to 80 miles out, they'd receive $6 per day. If they were 80 to 100 miles out, they'd receive $8 a day. And if they were further than 100 miles, they'd receive $10 a day. If they were from 0 to 59 miles, they got nothing. All right? They did not get reimbursed for mileage, as we might think, where you go back, fill out an expense report, and set up and say, I traveled 123 miles at 31 cents a mile, and that works out to whatever. All right? So they were not paid mileage.
But that can be a matter of bookkeeping convenience, can't it? It's easier to pay someone a per diem, and then you have to worry about receipts and all that sort of. That's a question I wanted to pursue with you also, is that this, in a traditional fixed situs case, the employee is not paid to come to drive to work, or not paid a per diem or a reimbursement generally, are they? That makes this a little different, does it not? The recognition, I guess, that the employee is having to drive oftentimes, I guess, further than the employee might drive to the company plant or whatever. Is that significant? I mean, that's what I want to know.
I don't think it's significant, Your Honor. I choose to live 30 miles away from Columbus. Every day on my commute in, I'm being passed by license plates that are even further out than I am.
Well, but that's, you've chosen where to...
I'm not being paid mileage to get to work, I'll grant you that. I'm not being paid per diem.
Yeah, but you know where your site is at work is. You're not, you've chosen where to live here. The employer's chosen where they're going to go to work. Is there a difference?
Well, their customers dictate that. But let's assume for the moment that the drill site is across the street from Midvale. On that day, they receive nothing. If they're less than 59 miles or less, they're not receiving the per diem.
And the years of commission, counsel, we try and make definitions work here in with regard to the full statutory scheme, which this is, which says construe liberally in favor of claimants. It seems to me that we know the cases say fixed situs. We have to define fixed situs, I guess. And your definition, as I read the brief, would be fixed situs, even if a person goes every day. I think it's Hawkins where the auditor kind of goes to one job or another. It's not Hawkins.
Demko.
And so that person, let's say, changes situs, their fixed situs daily. You would say that those were temporary fixed situses, and therefore the travel not compensable injuries during that time. But if they travel around during the day, that's really your line of demarcation.
Right.
If you travel anytime during the course of the day, for the benefit of the employer, not to lunch, of course. But
right.
So you do half-day shifts. Now we've got Demko, but we've got the Demko going half-day to, one company and the next half of the day to the other. She's fixed situs?
I would say in that situation, she's not fixed situs.
Okay, because she travels during the day.
Right.
Why is that a good line?
Okay. I think it seemed like at workers' comp, it's maybe tougher to draw lines than maybe some other areas, but it's our position that these cases are all decided whether we're going to apply the going and coming by two classifications, fixed and non-fixed. The court below adopted a semi-fixed, which I'll address in a moment. It's our position that a non-fixed situs employee is one where travel is so intertwined as part and parcel of their employment,
mm-hmm.
that you can't separate them. For example, a UPS driver, a package car driver.
Yeah, those are easy.
Well, those are easy.
Ms. Demko isn't all that easy, because it's not really an issue to her employment.
Ms. Demko testified that she anticipated being at this particular plant all day.
No, but I'm our new Ms. Demko, where she shifts in the middle of the day.
All right, she's going to move during the course of the day. It's
That's the problem.
Dry line, you can move once, move twice, move three times, move all day long, you know. But I struggle with your mistake, so too. Down to one, I don't have a problem.
But now we know that your line is moving during the day.
Correct.
But the difference, wouldn't there be a distinction be that the person that goes to a temporary but fixed site is like a painter that goes to a house and paints for a week and then goes to another house. He's driving to and from work like everybody else is driving to and from work. His location just changed. The distinction I seem to see with moving after you get there is now you're not coming and going to work, you're moving within the work site. So maybe that can be the distinction if we have to write any law that we fit some kind of distinction. In this case, we have, when people would pose a scenario where you're going to different sites all within a 5-mile area of downtown, how about, you know, a delivery person who has downtown Columbus, does that, you know, that seems to have folks react differently than the Cubby folks, people who work for Cubby Drilling here who are driving interstate. Hundreds of miles, 100 miles, I mean, you know, then that's an odd way of breaking it off, is how far you drive. Or is that legitimate? Because
I
you're really, it gets more beneficial to the employer the farther you go from home?
I don't think so. I'm troubled by, let's try to come up with a mile to see if people as myself choose to live further away, you might have a fixed status. I think we get into trouble. The bar struggle with these things and how far do we go and how long does it take to get there and all that stuff. Below, we have some general rules here. In addition to going and coming, we're excluding millions of employees in the state as they travel to and from work each day, that the injury must arise out of the employment and be in the course of the employment. Now, Applebee's argue we need to try to bring themselves within those general rules that but for their employment they would not have been there. And, well, let me address that forward. That's a slippery slope, and I think this court's been down before. We got that total deal from Reversal with the products versus the Batten. You know, we can make all kinds of absurd arguments once we start down that slope. Left for my being here today, I wouldn't
have gone to drag it. But in this case, isn't travel part of the job?
I disagree. It's no more part of the job.
Wasn't there testimony in deposition that the supervisor or the boss said that travel is part of this job? Was that his impression of it?
I disagree with you, I just don't recall.
Wasn't it for the sole benefit of the employer that these people traveled to the job site, because couldn't they have employed people near the job site and not made travel part of the job?
The employees had the option of staying at or near the drill site. They could have checked into a motel.
Getting back to the employer, wasn't that the choice the employer made, that the experienced people that he had as an employment would have traveled to various job sites for his convenience and for his benefit, and that it as such it became part of the job?
I disagree. I don't think there's any more benefit to Cubby with these employees than there is a benefit to this court when your experienced, knowledgeable, skilled employees in the clerk's office or wherever.
Let's put it this way. Did Cubby hire any other employees to do these jobs?
I don't know, Your Honor. I can't answer that question. I'm sure they did. I'm sure people came and went and they replaced them just like any other employer does. They didn't go into town and hang out a sign and say,
so you contend that this was not part of the job, that just an ordinary coming and going case?
Yes.
Okay.
Maybe another example. Let's say the Supreme Court has a secretary who takes a 2-week vacation. In order to keep things rolling, you hire a secretary from a temporary employment agency. Now, on the second day that that secretary is here, she's coming down Broad Street, making a left-hand turn on the third to go into the underground parking garage. Another secretary that's been working at the Supreme Court for 15 years is coming down Third Street. The temporary secretary runs the light. There's a collision. If we adopt the Appellee's argument, the temporary secretary would be covered because she moves from place to place. Yet your 15-year Royal employee would not be covered. They're both going to the same place. It's a fixed situs.
What about if the Supreme Court hears a case in a different county? Are the people that travel to that area not the fixed site, but to a temporary site?
I would submit in that case.
Covered by
be careful about your answer on this, Mr. Higgins.
I would submit they are covered, Your Honor. You have a permanent fixed situs at one point. It's just like if I have a secretary and we run out of legal pads and I say, hey, would you mind jumping your car and running up to Staples and buying some? I sent her on an unusual special errand. Her fixed permanent site employment is next to it. So our concern here, well, here again, I don't think we need a semi-fixed test. Now, if you want to adopt a semi-fixed site test, we submit you the case of Kidd versus Covey Drilling is a better way to go. In that case, the court adopted the fact that Kidd is almost identical to these cases. Same situation. Same employer. The only difference is that Mr. Kidd was on his way home instead of on his way to work when he was involved in an accident. In that case, the Stark County Court of Appeals held that Mr. Kidd was a semi-fixed situs employee, but went on to say that the one incoming rule applies to semi-fixed.
Counsel, if the employer had furnished a van, say,
I wouldn't be here.
So furnishing the vehicle, everything else is the same.
It puts the employer in a position of having control, like running around with his van or saying we're going to, you know, I've had clients of advised not to do that for that very reason. They got trouble finding part-time employees. They wanted to send a bus up to Iowa State to put a bunch of kids on and take them to their place of employment. And don't do it. I think that's entirely reasonable.
Let me change it from a van. That implies gathering everybody. A rusty old pickup truck,
right.
Saying, you know, you're going to drive right. A lot.
I think that just is another element to indicate that the employer, that's the Fisher versus Mayfield test, how much control did the employer exercise? And that's starting to move to more control to the employer. That might not be enough to overcome the burden, but I submit to you it's...
I guess I'm suggesting an example. It's a different form of compensation instead of the per diem or the your $6 or $8. They just say, here's an old
rattle
trap. You're going to have to be on the road a lot to drive our car. You buy the gas, drive our car.
It's more control for the employee. My point is here, we have a voluntary ride-sharing arrangement organized by the employees, their car, their gas, they pick the route, they pick the time, they can stay overnight in the place.
These people I see in your brief stay at one job site, start to finish, so they're involved in setup, tear down, the whole, it's their drill project from beginning to end. They don't come in for a specialized purpose.
Right.
And move on to the next.
There are three crews, 8-hour shifts, 24 hours a day.
A modification, I guess, of Justice Piper's question. If employees here had driven their own cars to Cubby's office, wherever the office is, and then driven to the job site, they'd be covered, right?
If they were required each morning to meet up at Cubby, that's a different case. I don't know what I'm willing to go so far as to say they're covered, but it's certainly a different case than we have here.
Where would their fixed job site be in that instance?
Well, I'm trying to...
That's why it's a different case. Can't have two of them, I guess. Can you have two fixed job sites? Or one employee?
It's back to Ms. Demko, where she two places in the course of the day.
Well, but I mean, the Cubby requires its employees to come to the Cubby headquarters, and then, for whatever reason, do push-ups, get ready to go to work and whatever, and then they go out to the... That's...
I would say, the nature of their business, even though they report to Cubby in the morning, which they don't in this case, but if
right.
they did, find out where they're going that day. To me, the work they still need to perform is at the drill site. All right, now if they picked up a pickup truck and a drill rig and a bunch of tools and all of that,
then
we're heading off. Now we're doing something for the benefit of the employer. We're transporting tools and equipment and all of that, but we don't have that here. I feel compelled to mention that we do have a statute here, 4120.452, which to my knowledge has not been addressed by any courts until the Cubby cases arose. In the Kidd case, the Court of Common Pleas said the statute's clear and unambiguous and applies. And it says that if you're participating in a voluntary rights sharing arrangement and you're injured, you are not in the course of your employment. The statute's never been challenged. It's been on the books for nearly 15 years now. We've had four pieces of major legislation since it was first enacted, and it's never been amended or repealed. It is the law of the state. We might not like it. Nonetheless, it is the law.
But that's not a fixed situs case, is it? I mean, that just says that just by the fact that you're in a carpool doesn't give you any other different coverage.
Like to insert the words fixed situs, those words do not exist. The Court of Appeals below would like to insert the words private or employer sponsored. Well, in this case, clearly it was private. It was not employer sponsored, but nonetheless, those words don't exist in the statute.
Thank you, Mr. Hickey.
Thank you.
Mr. Becker.
Per diem payments are clearly established by the Forshaw and Ranger depositions in the record, as well as by the summary judgment affidavits by Bill Blackman Rocious.
Is the demarcation line in your mind the fact that they were given per diem payments?
No, we would win at all three levels of the Industrial Commission, the trial court, and the court of appeals.
So they were driving the district in 59 miles. Radius, you are still win.
Absolutely.
All right, now their brief makes much ado about the fact that if we adopt your proposition that every painter, every construction worker, every freeway worker will now be covered. What is your response to that argument?
Our response is quite simply this. When you hire employees and you send them out over a 3 or 4 state area to various places to go to work, they're covered on the way while they're on the site and on the
way. What's my response to the other group? I mean, we've got, as Justice Scalia said, we've got to write a law that applies to more than just the fact.
I believe you already did in the loans case where you said where driving is an integral part of the job. Driving becomes a hazard.
So if a painter then does go to a different location each week, he will now be covered leaving from his house to the place of employment to adopt your proposition.
Did the employer send them there? That seems to be the line.
In your opinion, did he? If the employer said you got a job on 24th Fifth Street to go paint, is that sending them there?
Absolutely.
Okay, so you're basically conceding his argument that if we make this the rule of law now, everybody who drives from their home to a site that moves around will be covered.
I think that the question would be, are you an employee or an independent contractor?
Putting that issue aside, let's say they're employed.
That's a very big hurdle to clear. I think if you're an independent contractor and you're
let's concede that the person is on the books as an employee. He's a painter as an employee of the company.
Okay.
Department employee, a highway department employee sent out to work on a road site.
All right.
Your argument is that person now is also
out there. I believe that they are, yes.
even if the trip is only 5 minutes from their house.
I don't believe that the Lones case, Fletcher, or any of the cases that have looked at this have drawn a line as to how many miles you've driven.
So it's really not an issue of the fact that your person has to go to another state. It's really an issue of the fact that your employer is saying to them, you don't come to the office, you go here.
I think our issue is, once again, that driving is an integral part of the job.
I just want to be sure I understood the parameters of your argument.
Let me continue on that same vein for a minute. Covey is asking this court, Covey asked the Industrial Commission, Covey asked the two courts below to please relieve them of this liability. Covey's had that opportunity all along. In two words, hire locally. They've had this opportunity. We're not asking to be included in anything. We already are included. Law is clear. Covey's looking for the exception in this case, and they've had it in their hands all along, just like Dorothy had it with the red slippers and the Wizard of Oz to go back to Kansas. Two words, hire locally.
Well, now, counsel, that's really not very realistic, is it? I mean, this is a specialized activity. You don't just go out and hire somebody locally to come in and work on somewhat is fairly technical equipment and then pick it up and move it someplace else and hire a new crew of strangers to come in and operate that equipment.
And that's exactly the point, Ron, because if I send in our people over a three-state area driving hundreds of miles a day, in this particular case, one employee already been to the site, came back, was doing Covey a favor by filling in for another injured or sick worker, going back up for another shift. They're benefiting Covey so that they don't have to do, Justice Piper, exactly what you're saying. Take out newspaper ads in various locales, risk theft or poor performance by employees or people who have come out to operate their equipment.
Risk injury, though, untrained to.
Risk injury as well. It would cost Covey substantially more to do what we're talking about. We're not advocating that they do that. Work for efficiency. The more efficient any company is, the better off we as a consumer are. But you can't take yourself out of the workers' compensation coverage either. They're trying to have their cake and eat it too in this case.
How does hire...
They're trying to define saying you don't arrive to the job site till you get 3 miles back in the woods where we're drilling that well, and at that point, your workers' compensation coverage attaches.
Tell me how hire locally changes the rule of law here.
Well, I believe that you hire locally under what Justice Stratton was asking. If, for say, you're going to drill a well in Charleston, West Virginia, and you go hire four people for a crew down in Charleston to place an ad in the paper, you say dairy hands needed, and you find four people in the Charleston area to go out and drill a well, I believe that those people, as they're driving from their home out to the well site, are no different than your secretaries were when they drove from their home to the office.
Why are they different than the person who drives from Cambridge, Ohio?
Well, where you choose, as Mr. Hickey says, he lives out by Buckeye Lake and he works in Columbus. Where he chooses to live, it is one thing, but when, as an integral part of your employment, your employer is sending you all over the state or all over a 3 or 4 state area, I think we have a substantial distinction.
Your reason that it can't be that, your reason for that hire locally has to be because they become fixed-sized employees, not because how far they drive.
Sure, they become fixed
action. But why is that any different? Again, why is that any different? That you have to say it depends on how far. I think you gave me the answer that you had to give. I don't think I agree with it. But because I don't see the distinction between hiring somebody who lives a block away from the site and hiring and having your regular employees who. Is it because those persons are hired just to work on that site and the other employees are hired to work at number, that's what you
correct.
Mean? Okay.
Correct. Yes, those employees would just be working on that site. Then when you're going to go drill a well in western Pennsylvania, you take an ad out over there and you hire a crew there. And when you drill a well up in Warren, you take an ad out there and you hire a crew there. So those people are no different than your secretarial staff.
And they don't incur greater risk in their travels by driving from their home to a fixed site. Another aspect of your argument is the fact that these particular employees
incur greater risks in their travels by traveling to all these number of work sites.
Yes, because the risk of driving, as this court stated years ago, becomes part of the hazard.
I suppose the employer has to make the difficult decision of whether it costs more to cover his employees for workers' comp than to go hire people all over the country. That seems like a heck of a way to run a business, I guess.
That may be one factor is the cost of doing business.
Right.
Absolutely.
The argument about being on the road more and having greater hazards maybe is challenged by how is that different from the fixed situs employee who chooses to live, even in our case on this court, some of us choose to live hundreds of miles away.
I believe, Your Honor.
And so we incur greater risks in our commute, okay?
But that's the operative word, commute. The law has been established, this court has held for years, that the commute, where you choose to live and then arrive at work, it is not compensable under the course of workers' comp.
That kind
of
raises the question, because we're talking about the hazards of driving. It gets worse the more miles you drive. And that's the point of the hazard of driving, isn't it?
Actuarially speaking, I believe insurance companies rate it that way, that if you drive more, that there's more risk. Yeah.
But commuting, just long distance or not, same. It shouldn't affect the legal analysis.
Well, isn't there a difference in what Justice Cook is suggesting? One decision is made by an employee, the other is made by the employer.
Absolutely. Commuting is an employee decision for where they live, as opposed to mileage that is incurred as a request of the employer. For example, when this court does go on the road, and you send your court reporter, Walter Cavalca, or your marshal, Tom Brand, the day before, to make sure things are set up and the microphones and the courtroom set, that would be compensable. Years ago. By the same token, when you appoint Judge McCormick to go up and sit by assignment in the Court of Appeals, or as Judge Marcus did, many, many courts he was assigned to, I believe that if he's injured driving up or down 71, that's certainly compensable.
Well, when you drive here from Toledo to sit with the court and then drive back to Toledo,
Have you been asked by the chief to sit by assignment on the court of appeals?
No, right here.
Okay. What, are you living in Toledo?
My residence is in Toledo.
Justice Douglas, I know we've had this conversation before on what residence is and where you choose to live and the place of return. So residence is a specific legal word that raises a tremendous amount of questions. I believe, however, if you are living in Columbus and report here for work, that's a commute.
Okay, but if I live in Toledo and come here on Tuesday morning, sit here Tuesday and Wednesday, and then Wednesday afternoon go back to Toledo.
I believe that you're commuting then. Which is when I clerked here, Justice Sweeney commuted from Hamilton County.
Yeah, that's okay.
Where Justice Locher from Cleveland.
Is he covered under workers' comp?
I don't believe that Justice Locher would have been covered under workers' comp by coming from Cleveland down to the court.
Although
how's that different in your case?
Part of your, people will argue that integral part of the driving was gee.
You got to be here.
That's the question, because that's true of every employee. They can't work unless they get there.
Mr. Hickey chose to live at Buckeye Lake, and Justice Locher chose to live in Cleveland, and he applied for a Columbus job.
So that test of integral part of the travel and integral part of the job is a somewhat of a pernicious test.
It can be
argued that every commute is an integral part of the job.
No, I would certainly differentiate between commutes and jobs. I believe that commute is again where you've elected to live and where you're reporting to, and the job, of course, is where your employer is sending you.
Yeah,
if Judge McCormick is asked to sit by assignment in Cuyahoga County, he's driving up there. I believe he's covered.
When you look at the factors, integral part of the job is travel, and integral part of the job. When we just evaluate that factor,
It didn't have to be with Justice Locher's case, Your Honor. The Justice Locher could have lived 3 miles from this courthouse and done his job just as well. He chose to go ahead and continue.
So it's a matter of choice.
For commutes, I believe that is exactly right. That
well, that's,
you that wouldn't be a matter
sort of choice. I know.
Covey has never urged, Your Honor, that commute is what was going on.
The commute is distinguished from all the other persons who are required, such as a pizza delivery person. You have to have a car to get the pizza to the house, or you a furnace repair person, you have to have a vehicle to get to the people's houses repaired or whatever. That's a distinction between commuting and, I would guess, and needing a vehicle or needing to drive as a part of your work, is it not? I mean, it seems to me there's a pretty clear distinction between.
I believe it's a clear distinction.
The two.
So I have some time for my counsel. In closing, the ride-sharing statute. We're not trying to insert words of belief, but the court is well aware of all the fundamental rules of statutory construction to avoid absurd results. We believe that ride-sharing is not exclusionary. It just is not inclusionary. It was passed at a time, as the Court of Appeals noted, the oral argument with an energy crisis, people encouraging people to go together. The fact that you are riding together doesn't mean that you are now available for workers' comp. In this particular case, Covey knew these employees were riding together. Take a look at the per diems, $6, $8, $10. These people had to go give all the money to the one person driving to be able to afford the gas money. Even then, I'm not even sure if the federal rate of 31 cents a mile. Covey knew these employees were carpooling together, paid them just enough so that if three or four of them did it, they could get their gas mileage back. They knew what was going on. That's clear. The people would meet at the shopping center, go ahead and proceed directly. There's certainly no argument that these people were off on a fraud or deviated 1 mile anywhere and proceeding directly up to these wells in that.
Thank you, Mr. Becker. Mr. Mertes.
I represent Mr. Briggs and Kelly in this matter. I just want to touch upon a few points that were raised by Mr. Becker. You have to draw a distinction between the travel and the commute. The commute is when you're going to the fixed site of the plane. The travel is when you're going to different sites. And if I can draw an analogy, the business that Covey is in is in a service business. They send people out to these sites to service these wells. Much like the profession I'm in, I've also often got to go to the courthouse. I had to come here today to represent my client. The only way I could have represented my client today was appearing here at the courthouse. So when I left my house last night and came down here, as soon as I left my house, I believe I was covered. And until I get back to my office at some point today, I'll still be covered during that travel. Covey cannot perform their business without sending these people to these remote sites. And I would submit that because they have to send these people to these remote sites to serve their customers, that it's integral to their business and the benefit they receive is the continuation of their business.
If Covey were to have the employees report first to the site, to Covey's site, that is their place of business, they would, do you agree, they would not be covered for that part of their driving?
From their homes to,
right,
to an office?
Right.
No, I do not believe they would be covered during that portion of their travel.
So it makes good sense from their standpoint, I would guess, to have the employees go directly to the site, and also makes sense for the employee, because the employee is not having to rise earlier in the morning or whatever this work schedule is and go to the office first or go to the plant or whatever first and then out to the site. Is that, and they would be covered, obviously, I would guess you'd agree, once they got to the Covey headquarters and then left and went to the site. After they left Covey headquarters, they would be covered.
I believe they would be covered. That'd be a special hearing, and we've talked about that before. I think the situation we're dealing with in this case is a special hearing. The record demonstrates that Covey would call these individuals the night before and tell them where to go. In that sense, it's a special hearing, regardless if they're going from an office or they're going from home. Covey says, go out to Champion, Ohio, and services, you know, go out to East Liverpool or wherever they want to go.
The special air fits, we weren't paid before.
No.
I'm sorry.
How special is it if it's the same scenario every day to different spots? Does it fit special air?
I think it would because...
Every day is special?
Well, if they're going to different places, it's as if they're not going to the same place. They go to one location, one...
We know that.
Okay.
Does that make it, can every day be special? Fit the special air?
I think it depends on the circumstances of why you're going out. I think your employer says, yes, I need to go to this location, that makes it special.
Well, of course, they say it the day you're hired. I couldn't need you to go to special locations, different locations, regularly. That's making it special air.
With regard to the ride share, I just want to briefly touch upon that. Some points on it. Additionally, if you apply the ride sharing statute to this case, it's going to produce illogical results where if an employee is driving by themselves, they're going to be covered. If they're driving in a carpool, they're not going to be covered. And not only is that illogical, it goes against the public policy of reducing how it's going to push the air conditions. So we've submitted that it should not apply in this case.
Thank you, Mr. Mertes. Mr. Hickey, you've used your time. Take 30 seconds, if you'd like.
Your Honor, just 2 points. Keep in mind that it was the employee's choice, how they got to work, whether they stayed there overnight in the year, they were not required to travel back and forth. Talking about choices, that was their choice if they felt that they were close enough to home to make the commute back and forth each day. If they were so far from home that they did not desire to commute back and forth, it was their option to check into a motel room, sleep in the back seat, pitch a tent, or whatever.
But that doesn't take out the scenario of initial getting to Indiana. I mean, so they may take out the in-between nights, but the getting and the going and coming a distant work site, you know, that the state overnight can really cure that if she does it. That's making it a choice.
Their only obligation was to be there when their shift starts.
Yeah.
That just is the court or anybody else. Be here at 8 o'clock in the morning, that's when our shift starts. That was the only thing the employer expected. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hickey. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. We'll take a brief recess.
All rise.